What's up, everybody? Welcome to We Have Cool Friends, the cool show. We interview our cool friends about the cool things they're doing. I'm Greg Miller, and this is my cool friend, Rob Paulson.
Hi. I mean, should say, hello, Greg.
You should. You should do the entire show, hey, Rob, and Yakko.
Let me tell you, the fact that I am your cool friend, your poor audience is going, oh, Jesus. This old son of a, is a, come on. If you're going to have a cool friend, have it with a capital C. The only thing cool about me is the fact that I'm no longer hot to chicks. So there you go.
Here's the thing about you, Rob, is that I've had enough of it. You are far too humble. And I think it was, I forget which episode of We Have Cool Friends recently, I was talking about how great voice actors are and how they never know how great they are. And I will never, ever, ever forget when you came to do Up at Noon. It was, it was September 2013. Yes. You came up. And we flew you up and we had you here. What do you want to eat? You order the thing. And all day long, we walked you around IGN and you're just like, you guys are treating me like I'm a celebrity or something. And we were like, you are Rob Paulson. You are Yakko. You are Pinky from Pinky and the Brain. You are Raphael at the time from TMNT. Now you're also Donatello. Like, it was insane that you don't think that you're one of the coolest dudes in the world.
Well, thank you. That, firstly, that's really kind. And you've talked to other voice actors, Billy West, Maurice, Tress McNeil, Nancy Cartwright, all of us, we understand there's a distinct difference in the celebrity that we have been fortunate enough to cultivate. I don't draw them. I don't write them. And while your business with Bear, you know, it's a deeply collaborative effort. None of this gets done. Even a simple chat, all the technology, whatever goes into making your show the success it's been, is a deeply collaborative effort. I don't know that there are many more disciplines in performance or in Hollywood than animation that require so many moving parts. And when it works, it's magical. That is not hyperbole. I know that because all I got to do is talk like Carol and all of a sudden you're going, whoa, that's freaking me out. And because people don't look at me when I start talking like Carl and asking if you're going to finish your croissant, they see the chubby little guy with the thing. And that is emblazoned in their mind, coupled with my voice or Carl's voice. So you see my point. And I think because, and by the way, I do appreciate your really kind words, but I have had a profound, I don't even know how many privileges, Greg, one of which is happening now. Again, that's not hyperbole. But I've gotten to work with the best of the best. Mr. Spielberg now on the sixth different project. And when you're lucky enough to see how people who could behave any goddamn way they want to, they have the money, they have the pedigree, they have the their world renowned superstars in their discipline, and they choose to behave just like you and me. They're the nicest, most down-to-earth, unpretentious people I've ever worked with. So shame on me and the rest of us if whatever celebrity we have, we take it to an extreme and behave in the way that we should and oughta. Because I know how Steven moves through his life.
Sure.
Thank you very much. And I will accept your very kind compliment. Thanks, man.
No, anytime, man. And I feel like, you know, We Have Cool Friends has been going all year or whatever. And I guess last year it started. And I'm embarrassed it's taken me so long to get you on. Cause obviously, like, you're Rob. And I feel like, on top of, we go back, it's so hard to talk to you because I just know you so well. It's this idea that, you know, from the moment I first met you at San Diego Comic-Con and was interviewing you on the IGN stage, we had that moment of like, oh, you're cool. We're cool. We're cool. You know what I mean? Like, you have that,
we became friends. Yeah. In fact, I have to tell you, my son, Ash, whom I never think also. Yeah.
No, I've had him on. He was on Games Daily in November.
Right. On Game Explain and all that stuff. When he found out that you and I were friends, he flipped out because he was a big fan of yours. And that's what's so beautiful about this business. I'm old enough to be your dad.
No.
But that has nothing to do with the creative Jones that we both, and that all of the people who work with you share.
Yeah.
It is about creativity. We can all learn from one another. I was just saying yesterday, I am an old dog, but an old Hollywood dog, but I am so keen on learning all this new tech. I just signed up to TikTok the other day.
that is the new tech for sure.
I was aware of it. And I know it skews a bit younger. And probably most of the, like literally within 2 days, I had 250,000 followers.
Holy cow.
Now, all I had to do was say, are you going to finish that croissant? Because for some reason, that little meme has turned into something that a bunch of 14, 20, 18-year-olds, whatever. No, they weren't alive when I did most of the stuff that everybody would know. However, I've got this incredible technology by where I can connect with fans. And you know me, I love that. I crave what you do. I crave the interaction with fans. I can't get enough of it. It is something that is just part of the whole deal. And you're correct. We are friends, but we're friends first, because we already, you know, I know what you do. You know what I do.
Yeah.
Whether I'm with you once a year or once every 3 years is immaterial. We're buddies first. And I love that aspect about cultivating show business relationships. Because you never know. I've worked with people with a 20-year gap and said, oh dude, you've had 2 kids. How are you doing? I'm so glad we're working on the reboot of Pinky and the Brain together. I haven't seen you in 15 years. Remember when we did blah, 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 blah. You know, we played golf with so-and-so. Now we're working together again. And that's what's going to happen to you. And I love that aspect of this.
Well, I think that's, you know, hopefully being a good person, right? And building those relationships and keeping those kind of people around you. That's what it's
precisely.
All
teaches. I mean, come on. You know, you've become, and rightfully so, a celebrity, a big star. You've got a zillion, I mean, a million, whatever, 200,000 followers. And you've cultivated, people have too many choices, Greg, to just follow you because because you're there. They choose to follow you. They choose to pay attention to what you say. You know, they want to be a part of your ethos. And I'm getting a little existential, but I've learned that. People have plenty of opportunities, man. Everybody's the flavor of the month. The most prescient human in my lifetime has been Andy Warhol, because he was right. Everybody is going to be famous for 15 minutes. You've made it way longer than most.
The clock is ticking. I'm in trouble.
You see my point. It's not an accident that you're successful. And so that's the reason that you and I hit it off right off the bat, because it's pretty easy to suss someone out in this business. And I don't even know how many times I've thought to myself with young men or women with whom I've worked, rarely in the voice realm, but when I do occasional on-camera stuff and people who are, who become really famous really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's almost really difficult if you're 25 or 30 to not start to believe that shit. I don't know, to be honest, how I would have behaved if I got out to LA at 22 when I did. And at 25, I had $100 million in the bank. By 26, I'd been in rehab 14 times.
Sure.
But when I run into people who do behave kind of in that self-aggrandizing Hollywood way, my first thought is, sweetheart or young man, I hope you save your money, because I've been around a long time and Hollywood doesn't need you. As you know, if I were to die right now, it would be very inconvenient for you and Bear, but the people in Hollywood who know me would say, oh, Rob is a pretty decent guy. Well, shit, I reckon we better start recasting. That's it, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Good on you. You're here and you're successful and it's not an accident, buddy. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. But I mean, obviously, congratulations to yourself, not only for the body of work and career we've talked about so much. Because again, Up at Noon 2013, and then you came and did a Game Over Greggy show in 2015, February. Right. Like, again, those are the episodes of the Game Over Greggy show that are so crystallized in my mind. Right. The people that when we left IGN, you know, we left the big time and we were working out of a spare bedroom. And it was like, people still come hang out and be on this show. And the fact that you would come.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, you know, that's the thing. It's not about, it's not about IGN with respect to my relationship with you.
Oh, IGN's great. Yeah.
Right. IGN is wonderful. I mean, you know, all of the things that I'm Funny or Die, all the people who have been kind enough to want to chat with me. And oh my God, today when we came on and our friend Bear freaked out when I started doing this, that is what is so great about my gig.
I also freaked out when you started doing the Carl voice. I just want to say, because I also grew up with Jimmy Neutron, and I had forgotten in my brain that you did done the Carl voice. And that was just fantastic.
Well, okay. Now you said a very important distinction between the two, that you grew up with me, as long as you didn't say you threw up with me, which dude, it'll happen. But you see my point. I am so freaking blessed. All I have to do is say Nerf, and it, look what happens. It's fantastic. And then within 30 seconds, I hear about Bear, his mom, how much she loved Animaniacs, how important Animaniacs was in their family, and the fact that they're looking forward to it coming back. How can I quantify that? That has nothing to do with money, ratings, or action figures. You're talking to two Ninja Turtles. I know all about merchandising. But how wonderful that I have a job, Greg, and you and your kindness over the years have given me a platform to do what I just did that made Bear go, oh my God, my mom knows I'm talking to Yakko today. That is beyond cool. And I'm going to soak that in as long as I can.
Yeah. I think that's what I think for me, looking at you and imagining being you would be so, not hard, that's not the right word, but something to wrestle with, in the fact that you've had this career that spans so long that I feel just about everyone you talk to on that of our age who've grown up on you or whatever has that story, right? Because I mean, Animaniacs takes me back to sitting in Grandma Miller's living room, watching it, you know, sitting there after school in my school uniform with the hostess, the pies with the fruit filling inside them. I can't remember the name right now, but sitting there eating that and singing the song and watching the show. And like, again, great? Like the Pinky and the Brain Happy Meal toy I had or whatever it was, where, you know, Brain's head lifted up and you could move things inside it. Yeah. Like, those are, you have that experience, you have that range. You talk about being on TikTok now with kids who are so young that they weren't necessarily there at the same time. And then, as if that wasn't crazy enough, and you know, there's so much I want to catch up with you about on camera that has happened since 2015 when you were last on Kind of Funny. If that isn't crazy enough that everybody grew up on it, now you're about to do these reboots and re-enter a brand new age bracket, to the point that when you figure, knock on wood, if everything eventually goes right, Jen and I have children, right? Yeah. They're going to be watching this thing. And I'm going to be sitting and be like, that's Rob, but that's also something I watch. Like,
how about that?
That's crazy.
It is crazy, Greg, in the coolest way. And look, there is nothing difficult about being me. The hardest part about being me is continuing to work. You're a freelancer. You guys, you have your own show. I am, and certainly I get asked a lot by younger actors. You know, I've had the circumstance in which I've been across the table having a chat with a couple of young actors, and they have this wistful look, and I know what they're thinking. And so I tee it up for them, and I say, you guys have any questions? Yeah, how long before I get to be like you? And I said, well, let me tell you something. I appreciate what you're saying. You're saying, oh my God, here's a guy that I've grown up listening to, and Billy West, DiMaggio, all those that are Welker. I can't wait to be in that position where I get work. I just wake up in the morning and decide which job I want to do. I have an Emmy, I have a Peabody, I have all these awards, and I let them say their piece. And then I respectfully say, and you know what, kids, when we're done today, I'm going to audition for the voice of a freaking talking ice cream cone. Does it bother me? Not a bit. Because the times that, and this is an important bit of the equation for young creators, especially those who, like me, came from Michigan and moved to Hollywood all those years or whatever. You know, when you choose to be a performer, or a creator, you've hit the jackpot with the woman whom you share your life with, because she gets you. Mm-hmm. But there are people listening to me now who went through heartbreak because they're Jones for moving to New York or LA to be a writer, actor, singer has cost them what they thought was the love of their life.
Sure.
Who down the road, when they're here in LA and broke, like we all are at times, we'll go, what was I thinking? Why didn't I stay with Kathy? She's now married. Oh my God, I blew it. Well, so right off the bat, people who do what we do are a little bit courageous because sometimes their parents are pissed off. Sometimes, I mean, it gets really tough for some people.
Oh yeah.
Right? But the thing is that the times when it gets, when it goes south for me, and it always does for every freelancer, because as much as I appreciate the fact that I have achieved a certain amount of celebrity in the realm, here in Hollywood, everybody who needs to know who I am knows. I don't get it walking down the street, but you're right. If I'm in Starbucks and I have on one of the cool masks that a fan has made for me of Ninja Turtles, inevitably somebody says, oh my God, your mask is cool. You like cartoons? You ever watch? Holy shit. Do you know who this guy is? And there's nothing. Everybody just is joyful. That's what the best takeaway is. But the way I mollify myself, the way I calm myself down and have for 40 years in Hollywood when it goes south is by saying, hey, hotshot, whoever shoved the gun in your head to be an actor, did your parents wake up one day and say, you better carry on the family business? No, in fact, quite the opposite. They say, oh my God, you're going to leave the University of Michigan? Rob, you're the oldest in the family. You're going to set the example for the other kids. What the hell's wrong with you? Well, okay, you're old enough to vote. You're old enough to be drafted. Don't let the door hit you or the good Lord split you. But that money that's going to Ann Arbor doesn't follow you to Hollywood, son.
Sure.
And every time that I was broke, every time that it goes south, every time, even in the middle of my career where I had a slump for 3 or 4 months, I reminded myself, I chose this. And I got to cultivate relationships with Greg Miller, with Steven Spielberg, with Maurice LaMarche, with Tress MacNeille, with all of these people who are my friends, who I can still call when I'm having a rough time. And they're the ones who say, dude, you're Rob Paulson. It's going to come back. Come on. You know, we've all been through this. That's what the glory, that's the glory, glorious aspect of this time, of this gig. Because you nailed it. It's about cultivating those relationships that are bigger than the paycheck, because the paycheck goes away. It's just the nature of what we do. And when it goes away and you can call on people whom you know what they're talking about, and they'll say, come on, Greg, you got this. And that's what it's about. So I'm really good. I was aptly cast as Yakko because I haven't shut up for 30 minutes.
Hey man, that's how the podcast is supposed to go. Nobody wants, they've heard me talk. There's enough shows where I get to talk over a long time, Rob. They want to hear from you.
Fair enough.
My question was, or is, I should say, you know, when you were here in 2015 and even 2013, you know, what I loved about you and what I saw you doing was taking all this modern stuff and applying it to what you have in terms of nostalgia. And that was talking tunes, doing the podcast about it, right? Where a lot of people weren't doing that yet, but you know, you didn't see these people ever. Now, I feel like everybody has a podcast now. You were ahead of the game on that. And then also the Animaniacs tours where you were going around and doing the live shows and all that stuff. When you were doing all that, and even I guess in the years before then and after, did you hold out hope that Pinky and the Brain would come back, that there would be an Animaniacs reboot? Like, did you just have to let that go and be like, the fates will decide, or were you always pushing for it?
The former. And it's a wonderful question, because I had so many fans. It's lovely, isn't it? And I'm sure you get this too. There are some, and often it's the younger folks who say such lovely complimentary things like, Mr. Paulson, I'm a huge fan. If Animaniacs came back, would you choose to be in it, or would you just say, no, I've had enough of that? Don't listen to this, kids. Are you fucking kidding me? Of course I'd say yes. But it's so sweet. You see, it's so sweet that they would think, you know, like Harrison Ford, would you say, I've already done, you know, The Fugitive, whatever. I've already done enough Star Wars. I don't want to do it again. Are you kidding me? Yeah. But like most stuff, I that wasn't in the cards. It was A, Steven Spielberg, and he's on his own timeline.
Yeah.
And, you know, in case you forgot, Steven Spielberg makes movies, really good ones, sometimes two or three at a time.
They keep him busy.
Yeah. So who knew? However, check this out. Randy Rogel, who wrote United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, and all the other songs that most, not all the songs, but the ones most people identify with on, you know, It's a Great Big Universe and We're All Really Puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. genius in the truest sense of the word, incarnate. He and I, as a result of my Talking Tunes podcast, I said, hey man, I don't know if you know this, but people really dig Animaniacs. And it wasn't false modesty. It was that I would go and do a podcast. Then my podcast got to Nerdist and it was non-camera version. And then I would have guests on who are about your age, who are actors who were starting to get some juice, and they were going to be on my podcast. But as soon as I started riffing as Pinky or Carl, they would often even break into tears and go, oh my God, I can't believe I'm sitting here with you know, Rob Paulson.
Yeah.
And I called Randy. I said, dude, this show has really struck a nerve. This was seven years ago. Why don't we just do a couple of nights at the Improv and just do the music? Get a cheap piano, and as long as it's in tune, that's all we need. And people loved it. So yeah. Then we got a licensing deal with Warner Brothers, by which they said, well, if you want to take this around and on your dime, we'll give you the permission, but do it with orchestras. And we did 80 pieces. And the people who would be subscribers to the Colorado Symphony, and the last week they saw Yo-Yo Ma, and the week before they saw Renee Fleming. And then, you know, they see this thing for the whole family, part of their subscription, the music of Animaniacs. Steven Spielberg, never heard of that, but what the hell, I paid for it, I'll go. And they stick around after the show in their pearls and their fancy stuff and their blue hair and get a young man to me.
Yeah.
That was incredible. You boys are so talented. And of course we had this cartoons on the screen behind us, and it killed. It absolutely killed. Then a few years ago, I get a call from Sam Register, the head of Warner Brothers Animation, saying, why don't you and Tress and Jess and Maurice, Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, and Pinky and the Brain, come and let's have dinner. We got something I want to talk to you about. And the conversation was, Steven and Warner Brothers, rather, Steven Amblin and Warner Brothers have caught wind of what you guys are doing. You know, there's maybe we should think about a reboot. So here it is. Never in a million years, and let me qualify this, I don't think for a moment that I or Randy and I are the reason, but I don't think there's any doubt that the combination of the fan love and the labor of love, that Randy and I didn't make a dime. We dropped 40 large of our own money to get it on its feet. We're making some money now, maybe we're breaking even, but I don't think there's any doubt that between the fans' support and our desire to do it just because we could help to really fuel the reboot. So, and I'll tell you this much as well, which is really something. I don't even know how to, this is mind blowing. When the reboot was a thing, Mr. Spielberg immediately called each one of our, or let Warner Brothers know, I want to have a blown up 8x10 of Rob, Tress, Maurice, and Jess, because we're going to go pitch this. And Mr. Spielberg went to every pitch himself. Wow. Went to Hulu, Apple, Netflix, and Amazon. Hulu bit, but it was clear from the beginning that Mr. Spielberg said, by the way, these are the actors. Not only can they still do it, but they can do it better than they did when we first did it. So it's not going to be Peter Dinklage as the Brain and Russell Brand as Pinky. It's going to be the authentic actors who did it. That is a huge deal, Greg, for a rank and file actor like myself to have the king of Hollywood say, son, if we do this, you're in. I mean, and so it's just, if you're going to get a reboot, honestly, what a glorious way to sort of start the last act of my career. You know, it could not get any better than this. I don't even know how to, literally tongue tied. It's incredible.
I mean, that story alone. Yeah. I didn't realize that Spielberg walked you guys around or walked the photos around. I was like, we got to do this. And I mean,
right. He chose, yeah. Like, I just want to make it clear to all these zillionaires at Hulu and Netflix. Don't even start with, who can we get to be Yakko and Pinky? Don't even go there. If we do this, I'm in, meaning Mr. Spielberg, but so are these four, just so you know.
Well, that, I think, you know, speaks to something I always find so interesting for both voice actors and then people who are making things with characters, where, you know, Nolan North, obviously friend of the show, friend of mine for a long time.
I just spoke to him yesterday.
Did you tell him to get out of here? Because you should, no, I'm kidding.
He's too goddamn handsome and talented.
Right? I know. It drives me crazy that he's getting more handsome the older he gets, too. You know what I mean? God. It's the opposite. But like when he, you know, he was already my friend for so long. And then when he got Superboy on Young Justice, mm-hmm. and like that, I remember having a conversation with him of just like, man, that's so cool. And that's like a character that means so much to me that I would feel like if I ever got that kind of role, right, I would be like, I will do this forever. I would make that clear to everybody. I will work scale. I will do whatever. I will always be that kind of thing, right? Because you have ownership over it. But in the same breath, like, there have been so many interpretations of Superboy. There have been so many different things, yada, yada, yada. For Animaniacs, right? Like, there's the three Animaniacs. That's what it is. Like, you are Yakko, right? And again, for what I think they're trying to achieve by bringing it back is, hey, person who grew up with this and now has children of their own or just wants to see this again,
right,
let's go. And I think you would lose so much if it was that here is, you know, whoever being Yakko. Sure.
I think you're 100% correct. And that's the thing is Mr. Spielberg is the biggest nerd of all of us. He just happens to have incredible talent and $4 billion, you know? but if you watched the eponymous thing that was on, HBO a couple of years ago, just the documentary, Spielberg, in which he hosts. About halfway through it, there's a chunk, Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, Pinky and the Brain, all this stuff. And I called Maurice and I said, dude, we're sandwiched between Schindler's List and War Horse. and Mr. Spielberg is talking about how important it is that he feels at the beginning of the piece, he talks about how important he feels it is for movie directors to direct animation, to really know that in the realm of animation, Hayao Miyazaki, Mr. Spielberg himself, others, Bob Clampett, Chuck Jones, whatever, the best of the best, that you really are able to let your mind go to places that even live action can't go when he was beginning. Now, of course, you can go pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
But his point was very salient. And because he is like that, he knows that the most authentic representation of Bugs is Mel Blanc. That does not mean that Eric Bauza, God bless him, who is this incredibly gifted young man who is now doing Bugs. Billy West did Bugs in Space Jam. Bugs is Bugs. But if you're going to do something like a reboot,
and you still have a guy who can do Yakko, it doesn't matter what he looks like because he can still nail it. And Pinky.
Narf. And Maurice, like falling off a log. Same thing with Tress. Same thing with Jess. That we have a window of time in which we have the technology to make it fabulous. We have Mr. Spielberg himself, who at 73 can still work and is still working. And we have the actors who are better than they were 20 odd years ago, because it's not about this.
It's about this and this and this.
Okay. So we have a glorious opportunity. And Steven gets exactly what you're talking about. It's about the authenticity of the characters. Either we do it now or we don't do it. Now, if somebody comes back and decides to do it 20 years from now and I'm dust, great. It may, I hope it's still relevant. Because there have been different versions of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Of course.
There have, you know, but if when I was a kid or even a grown-up, shit, if I was 40 and I could have watched Carl Stalling, who wrote with Mill Franklin, all that glorious music, Kill the Web, even though that's Wagner, you know, duck season, wabbit season, fire, boom, you know, if I could have seen those cartoons projected on a 100-foot screen with Milt Franklin and Carl Stalling conducting the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra and Mel Blanc coming out singing, yep. Yeah, what's up, Doc? Jesus Christ. I'd have paid Led Zeppelin ticket money to see that. So while Randy and I don't compare ourselves, that's for others to do, to Mr. Blanc and Mr. Stalling. You see my point.
Yeah, oh, totally, totally.
You know, they can go, oh my God, that's not a representation. These are the guys who did it. So when they hear Tunisia, Morocco, Uganda, Angola, Zimbabwe, Djibouti, Botswana, they're going, oh my God, that's the real guy and the real composer. And you know what even the cooler part is? You look back at the 80-piece orchestra, the mean age of which is 35. They're going, I mean, they're flipped out because they're playing the music that inspired them to become an oboist for money.
Right, right.
It's the coolest, most incredible connection. And it's profound. It's amazing.
Now, something you said there is terrifying to an extent. You said this is a great project to start the last act of your career.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think about that often? How much longer you got? How much you got left in the tank?
You know, I think about it a little bit because I had cancer. I had throat cancer a few years ago, and I'm fine. Throat cancer.
I want to talk to you about that, so don't worry. We'll get to
that. That's right. What's the great axiom? We make plans and God laughs.
Yep. I know it well.
As Tress McNeil would say, she would say, listen, don't bring her into this, meaning God. Right? But I think anytime you have a life-altering experience, I was told at the beginning of my throat cancer experience, it was 4 years ago. We're pretty sure we can cure you, not remission. We're pretty sure we can cure you. And I know you've had your own experiences.
Yeah.
But before we do, we almost have to kill you. And it made me laugh because I have a wicked sense of humor that really, really helped me get through my own time in the cancer cage. But the treatment is brutal. For obvious reasons, they pound on your mouth, your throat with radiation and chemo. It beats the daylights out of you.
Yeah.
But I'm fine now. So much so that nobody knew any different when Animaniacs came back. I told very few people for obvious reasons. I don't need sympathy. I don't want sympathy. And what that does do, I think, is bring to bear the fact that this is a finite experience, the human experience. It just is. What it also does, at least to me, which I don't think is that unusual, is it crystallizes the concept of living in the moment. My cancer was a gift. And I say that not cavalierly. I say that because I don't have a silver lining from my cancer, Greg. I have a platinum lining. The opportunity that I've gotten more times than I can count up to today and down the road to help, to because of what I do, because I had the type of cancer that would go, are you kidding me? The guy's a place kicker and he got toe cancer, you know?
Right. That was the most ridiculous thing. I remember hearing about this and talking real briefly to you because obviously, you know, I know how much going on. But like, really? Like you have throat cancer. You know what I mean? It's like that. How does that happen? Like, how does, you hear about that kind of stuff exactly like you're talking about toe cancer for a kicker. But this is your entire world. And it's what we just talked about, right? It's not about this.
Yeah.
You could be any different way,
nose cancer. Yeah. But anyway, the point is that to me was exactly the point, that cancer is so nefarious and so odious It does not distinguish. It doesn't play favorites. It kills or alters irrespective of who you are, how much money you have, what it is you do for a living. And that was precisely the reason that I embraced the experience, knowing A, that I was going to make it, but that afterwards, if I had this incredible opportunity to go way beyond my profession and be a literal voice and a presence to help, to make a difference. So now, again, here we are. Look at, I'm a lottery winner. We're talking about all the really cool aspects of the reboot with Mr. Spielberg, the fact that what it does to nice kids like Barrett, to you, others, all of that, how that all melds together for this incredible opportunity. And I had throat cancer a few years ago and I'm back doing it. So now all of this attention that is going to be drawn to yours truly as a result of friends like you and others, and they go, oh my God, you know that Yakko had throat cancer? What's that's like? Okay, let me tell you about the Head and Neck Cancer Alliance. I'm the spokesperson for, you know, headandneckcancer.org. There you go. Our Eddie Van Halen left the Rock, suffering from the same kind of cancer I had, and his came back.
Yeah.
And a year older than I, still could play guitar as well as I can knock out Pinky. And he's done. And I have not only a powerful story, but as a result of nice people who really work hard to make sure that people get all the information they need to get through it like I did, have, you know, enlisted me at headandneckcancer.org.
Sure.
And Jesus Christ. And then I got to write a book about it. So I can't look at my cancer as anything but a profound gift. I am the effusiveness that your audience sees from this wacky old guy in a Red Wing hat is utterly, you know me, and it's utterly authentic. Yeah. This is how I am. I live my life in gratitude. I know you do. You've already mentioned your sweet wife. And every day, as a result of my cancer experience, I can say, wow, this presidential race is really a mess. Yeah, it is. Well, I'm not going to waste any time on it because I get to talk to my friend Greg today, and we're going to talk about this and that and the other thing, and the fact that I had cancer, and maybe somebody somewhere in Skookumchuck, British Columbia is going to say, oh my God, the guy that was the voice of my childhood had throat cancer. My dad at 59 was just diagnosed. Hey dad, watch this. You got to see what this guy just did. That's what the glory of what you're doing is all about, pal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know it as well as I do, like the amount of people who come up to me and talk to me at a show or an email, even now, obviously with COVID, but like, you know, my father, my wife, my whoever, me, I got cancer and I went back and watched this thing, or I remember watching you going through it and I went and watched your 5 year later panel and all that jazz. And like, that got me through it, or that helped me understand what they were about to do. Like that is, the silver lining to the experience.
Oh my God. It's beyond that. It really is. You and I are in the happy business. Our job is to make people joyful.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's ever been at any time in my 64 years.
we're not rounding up. We're not rounding up.
that the phrase "we're all in this together" has ever been more truthful and palpable with respect to COVID, with respect to the necessary conversations about inequality and race issues, and politically, the most powerful office in the union in the world, arguably, and I'm not getting into politics, but
Well, you're welcome to.
Okay.
But don't worry about it.
What has happened as a result of one man holding that office and the repercussions internationally, all together, you know, we're doing COVIDCon 2020 virtually. All of that together has conspired to put us in a circumstance in which we are literally all in this together. Mm-hmm. And Greg and I and all the rest of us in the joy biz have a responsibility, I believe, to cultivate that joy, to be a safe harbor. And that's not hyperbole. Honest to Christ, that is not hyperbole. There is so much anger, confusion, a dystopian view of the way things are going to shake out. My home state of Michigan, you know, the FBI just arrested a bunch of freaking knuckleheads who were conspiring to kidnap the governor. Okay. I don't know of a time in which our job is more important, Greg, that the opportunity that we have the ears of so many men and women and children who need to understand that ultimately joy is so important, especially from two cancer survivors, and one of whom has been around a long time. I remember clearly when Nixon resigned. I remember the country being in a state of utter chaos, and we didn't have COVID, and we didn't have a lockdown. So if there's ever been a time in which people in the happy business need to do their gig and step it up, it's now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I've talked about it. I know for our audience, it's probably old hat at this point in this conversation, but like when all this started, right? And, you know, work from home began and shelter in place and all that, my thought was that our numbers would dip, that we would see people leave Patreon, that we would see people stop watching the shows, maybe shift to listening or vice versa. And it was the opposite, where everything went up. And after a couple of weeks of it, I was like, on the kind of funny side of it, game side, we expected this year not to affect too much. It's new consoles. Everybody wants to know about that. You're coming in. But like the kind of funny podcast numbers started going up. And it was that thing that we had a conversation. And it's just those shows were us. You've been on the Game Over Greggy show. It's the evolution of that. It was us venting about being at home and what that's like, but then also having fun and goofing around and doing this thing. And to talk to people and ask the question, like, why are you watching it? And it was this idea of everybody needed normalcy and fun. And they can't be with their best friends. So they had come, you know, watch again in maybe their lapsed fan or whatever.
Absolutely. Dude. This isn't, you know this, I'm not telling you something you don't know, but I'm speaking as a fan now. You often, and before COVID, you, Greg, and your folks are many people's conduit to the only joy in their life. And I know that is not, that
it's
is not
lost on us.
No, I know that it is not lost on you. And that's why, again, you're successful. I have many friends and fans, let's call them that, on the autism spectrum. And I've done a lot of work with different autistic groups, and I embrace that so much. Because long before COVID happened, you know, I'm very ubiquitous at conventions all over the place. I cannot get enough of it. And often it's because of the response of folks on the spectrum. I've had many experiences in which a parent will bring their child. I'm talking about a 30-year-old child, a young man or woman to whom buying a Slurpee is a difficult maneuver.
Sure.
And always will be. But their child is a profoundly gifted artist or remembers everything about every football player who's ever touched a foot. They have their own singular gifts, but they are, to be sure, challenged in the way in which they move through the world. And their sweet mom and dad have to deal with that every goddamn day. And I can say this because my sister my oldest nephew, Andrew, is one of those sweet children at 30 years old who will always need some help. So I know the conversations that parents have between themselves going, I love this boy or girl as much as I love my other children. God forgive me. What is going to happen when I'm gone? Sure. How is this sure. young man or woman going to move? I'm a person of relatively low means. How can I don't have a trust fund. They deal with that every day. And we all love our children. Okay, so they often bring their kids to me, Mark Hamill, Kevin Conroy, Jim Cummings, whomever. But for the times that that sweet boy or girl has found that Pinky or Carl or Raphael or Yakko is their spirit animal, and for whatever reason, a young man is almost nonverbal, but for whatever reason, when he hears, hello, nurse, Yakko is my guy. So yeah. people will drive like two states, Greg.
Yeah.
And the sister of the sweet young man whom I see 15 or 20 or 30 people down the line and is doing this, crying, because often people on the spectrum have really difficult issues with anxiety, loud noises, you know, and the young man is 28, 31, and he's doing this. And the sister comes up to me and says, Mr. Paulson, I just didn't want you to be freaked out. I said, no, I totally get it. What's young Anthony's story? Well, he's autistic, but Yakko is the only thing that gets him out of his head. When I told him that Yakko was going to be at New Hampshire Comic Con, we drove from Ohio, and he's having a hard time, but he's going to stick it out because he wants to meet Yakko. I don't even know, Greg, if he knew who the hell Rob Paulson was. Sure. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So this sweet woman, and this happens all the time. So the young man finally makes it up to me, and he's literally, and put my hands on his shoulders and say, we start to chat. And then all of us say, hey, I understand your name is Anthony. And it's that quick.
Yeah.
And then we start singing Yakko's World. and the young man who was an absolute mess, but stuck it out because he wanted to meet Yakko, and never in a million years would he want to be in that position unless he knew there was some reason to do it, leaves for 20 minutes being what to his sister is normal, is happy, is neurotypical.
Yeah.
For 20 minutes. And to his sister, it was worth the drive from Ohio. And to Anthony, it was worth putting himself through something that I'll never experience. I've been nervous. Oh, Jesus Christ, that's not nervous. That's, please take me because I can't handle this for 30 more seconds. And that stuff happens all the time. And so my point about all this rambling goes back to what you discussed about why your numbers went up. It's precisely because, Greg, you are the reason for a lot of people's joy, and sometimes the only reason. So you know how powerful your message is.
Sure.
And it is every bit as necessary as medicine, therapy, a solid relationship. What you provide to your audience, Greg, is essential. You're an essential worker, and why you're successful is because you know it, and you don't condescend to your audience. You accept them as they are, and you also share your own weaknesses and your own humanity,
your own mistakes, right? I think that's the biggest thing. We live in a world right now, right, where it's like, if you make a mistake, I think most people want to double down now and plan. Yep. No, I'm not wrong. That, because if you're wrong, then what happens next?
Because we have a person to whom, when I was a kid, you look to the president and your parents say, someday, sweetheart, you know, Sally, Bobby, someday you can be president. But we have a president, irrespective of your leanings, we have a president who indicts himself with his own words. So when you have the leader who literally says, I don't take responsibility, or et cetera, it is then becomes okay for people to not take responsibility. And I'm here to tell you folks, if you're older than I or younger than I, that is absolute bullshit. Our existence is here, if nothing else, is about personal responsibility. That's it. That does not mean that shit happens. It does not mean that we can't all get knocked down and take a punch. And it also does not mean that by sheer accident of birth, that there are people who are going to get a much rougher deal than Rob Paulson or Greg Miller, just by a sheer accident of birth. That makes it to me all the more important to take personal responsibility and understand how fortunate we are, thereby helping to understand other people who aren't. And that is something that you express all the time, Greg, by your utter humanity. And I know this conversation gets existential, but in this circumstance and in the times in which we find ourselves, it's important. And that's exactly why people love you, because you're them, and that's what they want. So God bless you for doing it, man.
Well, I mean, everything right back to you. You do the exact same thing. You know what I mean? Like everything, obviously, you said, I think you do it on a grander scale too, in terms of in bringing joy and, you know, making that for everybody's life. But
and that's the point, is we can all do it. And it can be something as literal, and we've heard this a thousand times, as literal as saying, man, I was at the, I forgot where I was, at the hardware store, and there was a young woman stocking shelves with this killer color in her hair. It was great. I don't know if I've ever seen it in nature, but it was very cool. And I told her as much. I didn't say, hey, baby, great hair. Of course not. That's disgusting. I said, oh, my God, I love your hair. And immediately she just said, oh, thank you. And I said, no, seriously, it's just killer. It takes a lot of guts, and good for you, kiddo. Great hair. That was it. But you know what, man? I walked around and did my shopping, and I came back. I walked by her as I was checking out, and she stopped and she said, thank you so much. You made my day. Now, that was not my intent. It really wasn't. I just do it because it was really cool. And obviously, when you color your hair to be fuchsia, greenish, orange, you do it so people look at it.
Yeah.
Right? And I did. But that is a kindness that it has nothing to do with celebrity. It has nothing to do with money.
Yep.
We can all do it. And just as we know that we sometimes need to cut people slack because we don't know what happened to them, why they were rude to us, because they maybe had a fight with their child or something.
Sure.
But in the same vein, we also don't know what happened to somebody that morning and the compliment about their hair, or, man, you great looking car, or thank you so much for the extra help in finding my hearing aid battery. It really helped me. We don't know that compliment, that little moment of humanity, may have changed 180 degrees what they experienced that morning.
Totally. Right? You know what, I the way I always try to boil it down to people, right, is a grander thing to everyday experiences that I didn't know or think about, I guess, until Up at Noon put my name on the cover of IGN and suddenly people start talking to you at events that you had seen for years but never actually interacted with. But I think the most important thing for a human being on a day-to-day place is recognition. And I don't mean recognition of, oh, you host a show, you do all this different stuff. I mean, boil it all the way down to being in a store, and when I see somebody have a name tag on, I call them by their name. give them humanity to this job. And I know I'm asking about where the toilet paper is, but I also see you as a person and understand what's going on. I see, you know, we were a couple weeks ago by the office or whatever, and a single father was struggling to get like an 800-pound aquarium, or this giant aquarium into his house. And I walked by and I'm like, I know it's a pandemic, man, but do you want help? And he's like, that'd be, you know what I mean? It's like that little stuff. And to us then, you know what I mean? The fact of, and I'm not trying to, for us and you and me and like meeting someone at a convention and then 3 hours later, see them on the floor and call them by their name. And it always blows me away when people are like, oh my God, you remember my name? I'm like, dude, I just talk about video games and I'm lucky enough that you listen to me. Like the least I can do. And I feel bad when I don't. And when I see somebody, it'll be years later and I'll be like, I saw you. And, oh my God, I can't remember. I'm sorry. I don't remember your name. Like, I don't care. You don't remember my name. You remember that you met me somewhere.
Exactly.
Like, and you can take that into your daily life and not be on a scale of going to a PAX or something.
100%. And that, my friend, is why you get it. I have so many stories, and that's what's going to be great. Long after, and by the way, back to a couple of questions ago. No,
I was going to say 900 hours ago.
Yeah, I don't worry all day about, oh my God, I had throat cancer, I'm going to die. No, it's like, I am not at all afraid of death, not even the least bit, because I know that by the time that I punch my ticket, I am going to have had a hell of a ride. I know that. So I'm not worried about it. But what my point is, I'm closer to the end than you are. So 30 years from now, when I'm toast, I might not be, but I mean, Dick Van Dyke's 94. So you will have had you've already had them because of your celebrity. But you get it, my friend. And you're going to have so many more of these glorious experiences. And my hero, as I grew up in Detroit, was a guy named Gordie Howe, my favorite hockey player of all time. And I had the great good fortune of getting to know Mr. and Mrs. Howe very well, because I played in a team. I played hockey all my young life and still go out and bang around with my buddies. And it was the only thing I wanted to be was a hockey player. I learned very early on I had neither the talent, temperament, nor dental insurance to make a freaking nickel. But I played hockey with a bunch of other actors and we'd play the old timers and raise money for children's charities. Okay. So I got to know Gordie very well. And here's a perfect example of what you get, just like Gordie Howe and Steven Spielberg. They get it too. I was with Gordie, oh, this was 25, maybe 27 years ago. His invitation to come play a softball tournament in Vancouver, fundraiser for a children's hospital, bring all your Ninja Turtle stuff and, you know, we'll sign autographs. So I'd already gotten to play hockey and done a lot of hospital visits with Mr. Howe and got to know him very well and Mrs. Howe. And I'm sitting next to Gordie for 2 hours signing stuff, literally right next to him. And a young man about my age, so he's probably 32 at the time. Gordie was probably 65 at the time. So had already signed literally a million autographs. He's Gordie freaking Howe.
Yeah.
He's Wayne Gretzky's idol, right? So a young man comes up after an hour in line, hands Mr. Howe a hockey puck. Gordie signs it with a silver Sharpie, hands it back. And the young man says, I mean, with all the reverence that I had when I was around Gordie, said, oh my, you know, looked at that puck and just, thank you so much, Mr. Howe. your hand must be getting tired. Check this out. Gordie put down his Sharpie and he looked at the young man and said, it is my pleasure, son. I have worked way too hard for this privilege. Now, that went in 5 seconds from my idol to my hero. And there is a distinct difference. And I learned in that moment that is how you behave if you're lucky enough to cultivate anything resembling celebrity. And kudos not only to you, but the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Your mom and dad, sure. I don't know your story, but it doesn't happen by accident. The fact that you are who you are and you move through your life that way serves several purposes. From a practical standpoint, the fact that you do take the time to know people's names and remember them as best you can. A, you got a fan for life. But B, you have a connection, an utterly human connection with someone who is a stranger and no longer is, who every time your name comes up, they'll say, Greg Miller, oh my God, that guy, he's the real deal. You know what? If you got to go to Goofball Con in Tulsa, make sure you meet him because he's a great guy. And you are. And when that person who is recommended by the guy you met 5 years ago meets you, he calls him up and says, oh my God, that guy's line was out the door, but am I ever glad I stayed to meet him? I was limping and he asked me what was wrong with my leg. And I told him, I had a hip replacement. No kidding, dude. Let me tell you about my experience with, that's what makes you authentic. Just like with sure. Gordie Howe, you know, and it takes no more time. In fact, it's more difficult to be an asshole.
That's true. Really is.
It takes more energy, Greg. So, you know, that's why it's such a gas to speak with you because you get it and it's authentic and your audience knows that. Your friends know that.
We can't do that. We have a guy we work with named Fran Mirabella. He charges 15 cents every time we say Fran. So right, we can't do that. Now, speaking of the kind of funny Frans, the best friends, I want to get you in the friend zone, Rob, where the audience asks you questions. But before then, I'm gonna pay some bills before then. So first, I'm going to remind you that this is We Have Cool Friends, Kind of Funny is your regularly scheduled interview show. Remember, it usually posts every Tuesday. You can find it on podcast services around the globe. And of course, youtube.com/kindoffunny and roosterteeth.com. I want to thank our Patreon producer, Mohammed Mohammed, who of course went to patreon.com/kindoffunny, tossed us a few bucks. He gets every episode of the show ad-free. He also gets the exclusive show Greg Way. Yes, I'm late for
September.
I know I'm late. But you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, get all those perks, including the ad, no ads on your show. And speaking of ads on your show, this episode is brought to you by MeUndies and HelloFresh. Let's start with MeUndies. MeUndies believes your comfort is about more than what's touching your skin. It's about feeling comfortable in your skin. Keyword, your, not someone else's. This isn't a Michael Myers movie. See, I thought originally Mike Myers because he did characters, and then I remembered it was Halloween. Michael Myers. Oops.
May I say that I, as a lab mouse, if I were to wear undies, it would be MeUndies. It would be
Narf.
There you go. Look at that, MeUndies. We're going to charge you double now. But it's almost Halloween, which means you can now match your undies to the spookiest season of all time. MeUndies just launched 3 new Halloween prints. So whether you're into cats, blood, or skeletons, they've got something right up your haunted alley. Of course, everybody knows I only wear MeUndies. I love them so much that when I got a sample pair, I bought my first pair. I then threw away the rest of the underwear and ordered more MeUndies. I continue to do that to this day.
Dude, well, I am in. I'll try them out. And by the way, I used to be the bouncer at the, what was it? Right up your what?
A haunted alley.
Yeah, I used to be the bouncer at the haunted alley. Don't go there.
Their undies grow on trees. No, seriously, they're made from irresistibly soft natural fibers sourced from beechwood trees. And you know what natural fibers means. That means they're micromodal and not only super soft, but breathable, light, and impossibly cozy. That's some serious comfort. Everything MeUndies does is to help you feel truly comfortable from head to toe inside, from the outside in. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off and free shipping. MeUndies also has their problem-free philosophy. If you're not satisfied with any product for any reason, they'll refund or exchange it. No caveats, no questions. To get your 15% off your first order and free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. And then our second sponsor and final sponsor is HelloFresh.
Hang on.
Yeah. HelloFresh. Okay.
Tim's gonna have to rewrite all these contracts, Rob.
I had to do it.
Get fresh pre-measured ingredients and mouthwatering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. Ladies and gentlemen, you know Tim and Gia have been using HelloFresh. They've been making delicious burgers they won't share with me, but you also know that I love cooking, and HelloFresh is a great way to get started. Of course, they send you pre-packaged ingredients with step-by-step instructions. You go through, you decide what you go through, you make it, you have a great time. You go online, obviously, ahead of time, pick what meals you're going to get, what you're going to do, how you're going to do. But most importantly, it takes out the choice. So you just know you have meals in the fridge that you already ordered ahead of time. You know what you're cooking. A lot of people don't want to cook because they have a bunch of ingredients. How do you assemble them? What do you do? That's eliminated. And on top of that, of course, you learn methods to cook as you go. That was the big thing for me service, right? Yeah, of course, I didn't know, you know, what blanching something meant until I had to do it. And I had to do it because of the meal I picked. And since it was expertly written, it was easy. Of course, these are there's a variety of meals here, all sorts of different stuff that's sustainable. HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients so you're not overbuying, which is a burden on the planet and your wallet. Their packaging HelloFresh uses is almost entirely made from recyclable or already recycled content. HelloFresh is also giving back. It's committed to making fresh, delicious food available now more than ever, and it's taken extra steps to keep its employees and customers safe, introducing contactless delivery, tamper-proof packaging, and team member wellness checks. So, of course, I think you should use HelloFresh. Tim thinks you should use it, and so does Rob Paulson. He hasn't, but I'm just tossing.
I would use HelloFresh, but my mom won't let me use a mixer.
See, there you go.
But I will... Eat it. I will.
Thank you. Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use the code 80morning to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Great. That's HelloFresh.com/80morning. Use the code 80morning.
Man, I'm in for both of those. I really, seriously, that's a great idea.
I'm going to text you all the URLs so you can't forget.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. I'm looking through where I want to start with you. I think this is an interesting one. Ignacio Rojas writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like you, and says, "What's up, Greg and Mr. Paulson? As someone who grew up in a Spanish-speaking country, I grew up watching dubbed shows, which meant that for shows like Jimmy Neutron, the voice coming out of Carl wasn't that of Rob Paulson, but that of another voice actor. Mr. Paulson, I'd like to know if you've ever heard any of the characters you voice dubbed and if you've been approached by any of the dubbing studios for your input on the process."
Great question. And I'll take a little bit of license. I love the name Ignacio.
Oh, yeah.
And I one of my favorite rock and rollers growing up was a guy named Iggy Pop, who is from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Yeah. So forgive me if I call you Iggy, but Ignacio. Thank you for your, yes, I have heard several dubs. In fact, often at Animaniac Sessions years ago, we used to, Andre Romano, our esteemed 9-time Emmy-winning director, would play 3 or 4 different new versions of the Animaniacs theme in Icelandic or Spanish or Portuguese or Thai. It was bizarre, really, like, just drinking a lot of bong water. It was crazy. I have heard, and I've definitely heard other interpretations, and that's a difficult job for the other actors.
Oh, totally.
Because they have to, often, you know, jokes translate differently, if at all. And so the way that,
I think so, Blaine, but me and Pippi Longstocking, what would the children look like?
Narf. That presumes that the people in
Peru, anywhere.
Yeah, in Argentina, no, maybe they know Pippi. You see my point.
I got
so
you. Yeah.
Have to translate it and also translate it so that the version, if it's Portuguese, fits in the lip movements that are already locked in on the page. Yeah, I've watched a lot of them. They're pretty cool. And I'm grateful that I don't have to do that. My head would blow. Yeah.
Zade Wilson writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, "Question for Rob Paulson. Hi, Mr. Paulson. I'm a huge fan of your work and I am working on being a better voiceover artist. I attended a Zoom workshop recently and the artist running it said, I might need to cut out dairy to improve my voice. Is this something you've come across in your own work or when interacting with other actors? It just seemed like a strange suggestion for voiceover. Secondary question, is there something in voiceover that you're not as good at? If so, how do you work around that? Thanks for all your work."
Not at all. Thank you, my friend. Very kind of you. With respect to dairy, I don't eschew dairy in my daily life. I have a little bit of milk in my coffee, but I don't, if I want a piece of cheese, I have it. It doesn't improve my voice. It's not smart to eat a bunch of ice cream or drink a bunch of milk before I work because, not to get too graphic, but dairy products often are sort of mucusy producing.
Yeah, you get phlegmy, right?
Phlegmy, right. So it's not especially smart to do it if your job is to speak or to manipulate your voice where, it, you know, you got to have
you got to have access to whatever your vocal cords can do.
So that, I think, is probably what your instructor meant. If you like dairy and you're not lactose intolerant, enjoy, right? With respect to the second question, and by the way, to your point, you're working to improve your voiceover skills. Me too. It never stops. You got to learn to enjoy the hustle. You really have to learn to love the process. It never stops. One of the reasons I'm excited about the reboot of Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain is because I'm way better than I was 20 years ago. And I should be. So don't stop that. That's great. Keep it up. Improve for the noblest of reasons, because it just makes your soul happy. It's so much fun to do, money or not. The other part of the equation, are there things, workarounds, things that I can't do? Yes. In fact, one of them happened directly as a result of my cancer treatment. I had 40 days of daily radiation treatments and then a bunch of chemo. And the radiation, took its toll as it would. But fortunately, the technology is such that they located the tumor and the scatter affected my voice, but it went away.
Yeah.
Took about a year. But wow. Anyway, a great example. I work on a really wonderful PBS show, Curious George, that is the a really faithful rendition of the book. Everybody's grown up with Curious George. It was fairly, it wasn't even that recent when I was a little guy. But the drawings and the beauty of the pictures are captured really well in the animated PBS version. And I have recurring roles, one of which is a little character that is a friend of George. It's a pigeon who goes, ooh, ooh, ooh. Okay. For whatever reason, I was not able, after I got done with my treatment for a while, to go, ooh, ooh, in the back of my throat.
Yeah, that trill, yeah.
Right. So I had to go, Jesus, goodness. People were nice enough to hire me, but a lot of them didn't know that I had cancer, and I didn't want to use that as a crutch. I didn't want to, So I found a way to just make it like we all do. Everybody can go with my tongue.
Yeah.
So I, instead of going, ooh, I went, ooh, and I panicked a little bit because when they said, hey, the character's name is Compass, the pigeon. Hey, Rob, we got a couple of Compass lines. You want to do those now or pick them up at the end? And I said, let's just wait till the end, because I thought, shit, I'm not sure if I can do it. And
yeah.
I couldn't. So I go, woo, 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 woo. And they're laughing, going, yeah, Compass had a stroke. Kinda. So I thought, I went, woo, 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 woo. Great, we got it. Let's move on. And I thought, oh, great.
This giant sweat drop falls from you. You're like, oh, God, yeah. Got away with it.
And it was so simple, but I worked around it. The other point is that often you will audition for a character. You might even get a couple of callbacks, and then you don't get it. And of course, you're bummed, and you want to. In my case, the most obvious example of that in my case was Futurama. I had, two callbacks for Philip J. Fry.
Oh, wow.
And Billy got it, and they made exactly the right choice. I mean, they really did. I was really good, good enough to get a couple of callbacks and get down to the wire. But Billy did things with the character that didn't even occur to me. And that's not anything but a kudos to one of my dearest friends in the world, because he killed it. And the reason Futurama is successful is in no small part due to people like Billy and John DiMaggio and Maurice LaMarche and Katie Sagal and Tress MacNeille. But Billy's the lead. And then he gave them Zoidberg and Doctor, whatever the other, a lot of stuff that I couldn't do. So they made the right choice. And it's not always a bad thing, you know?
Yeah.
But all it does is inspire you to work harder and come up with new stuff. So if you find something you're unable to do, just work at it. The great thing about cartoons is that there's no, literally you're unlimited. You're only limited literally by your self-consciousness in the most literal way, your consciousness of yourself. If you're unafraid to be a talking clam, go for it, right? Nobody's gonna say, well, that's not how clams talk. And if they're saying that because they've spoken to clams, then you need to
get away.
Yeah.
I got two more for you. Yeah. Mitch Krasen says, what is some of the strangest direction you've ever gotten from a director? I imagine it's very different than any form of acting. So he's talking about voice acting.
Boy, you know what, Mitch? That, my friends, is a professional segue, because we're just talking about a talking clam. I did a series of commercials years ago, animated commercials for a Texas power company, like Southern California Edison, Texas,
yeah,
or PG&E, where you live. And it was about how hot it gets in the summertime. And as you know, armadillos are quite ubiquitous in certain parts of Texas. And this was a talking armadillo. So we were talking about, you know, different ways that the character... Would it be, man, I'm old talking armadillo, talking on the stepping on that tarmac, I'd like to burn the hell out from your feet. Or, oh gosh, it's really hot. I'm walking across here. I thank gosh I'm going to my air conditioned thing because of Southern Texas power, whatever it was. But there were literally, I think, 9 words in the line. We had a person in Toronto who was one of the ad people. We had people, the client in Texas, and I was at a studio in Hollywood. And absolute God's honest truth. We get to the next take in line, and my friend Rocco, the board op guy I've known for years, says, okay, blah, 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 talking armadillo, take 62. And yeah. And he did that. He turned his head away and just went. And the following thing happened. I did a take, and the person in Toronto said, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but going, gosh, Rob, I'm not sure. It just doesn't sound like an armadillo. And the person in Texas was silent. I was silent. Mind you, we were on take 60, as I said, right?
Yeah.
And it was all silent. So the gentleman in Toronto said, do you have any ideas? And I said, well, I'm going to be straight up honest with you. We're at take 62. And I have 9 words. It is entirely possible that you've gotten the wrong actor. And if you did, no problem. I promise I'm not saying this.
This isn't coming from a place of anger, yeah.
No, but respectfully, I do this every day. And if you cannot get what you need from me in 62 takes, then again, respectfully, either you have the wrong actor, which is totally fine, or you really don't know what you want. We don't know what a talking armadillo sounds like. My suspicion is that you have it in the first 15 or 20 takes, because if you don't have it from me now, you're not going to get it any different, because I've exhausted what you have told me, what the client has told me, and what I've come up with. And your most recent response was, it just doesn't sound like an armadillo. And I respectfully have to tell you, I don't have anything else. And the guy in Texas, the client, said, thank you so much, Rob. We got this about 40 minutes ago. I'm fine. I'm happy. Jim in Toronto, we'll be in touch. I appreciate it. We're good. Thank you, Rob. Boom, click over. And so that was without doubt, you know, the most, but I bit my tongue because I'm about trying to keep the client happy.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You're the cook, right? They're asking you to make this dish. You're like, all right.
Yeah. If they're not happy, but if they ask me at 62 takes with 9 words, then you could probably call anybody. But if you, you know, and it's entirely possible that I was the wrong guy for the job. But yeah, that was the weird one. It's after 62 takes. It just doesn't sound like an armadillo.
Flip the desk.
Yeah. So thanks, Mitch.
All right. Final question comes from The Good Part. This is somebody who is in our Twitch chat. Usually I pull from Patreon, but sometimes I'm a benevolent God here. Yeah. The Good Part, I saw this go by and I grabbed it. This is when you were talking about sharing your story and how it helps people. Good Part says, "Hey, Rob, I'm that guy. My dad just passed in May of throat cancer at 54 years old. You and Greg are doing a great job talking about living a life in gratitude every day. It's something I'll always carry with me."
I don't need to say anything.
Obviously, we're sorry for your loss, Good Part. We understand that very well.
Honestly, Good Part, we're all sorry. So very sorry. I can only assume that your sweet dad had a wonderful sense of humor, because if you're lined up with Greg, then humor is a very important part of your life. And I would suspect it was a very important part of your dad's life. At the end of every one of my podcasts, I ended it by saying, "Laughter is the best medicine. The cool thing is you can't OD and the refills are free." And I know that, as they say, there are no accidents. The fact that I had this wonderful privilege of being on with my friend Greg, and you got to hear this on the heels of probably one of, if not the most difficult experiences of your life, and you got to now share your experiences with Greg and me, I don't even know how to thank you for that opportunity. If you find any solace in what Greg and I have discussed and the joy with which we're discussing it, then mission accomplished, bud. I'm going to do a shameless plug, but only because it's important. I wrote a book called Voice Lessons, and it is not a compendium of, and then I did, and then you know me from, and then
sure,
I-
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, it's not that. I had been asked, we kind of touched on, Greg and I touched on this earlier, about the lovely fans who are so impressed when we just show our humanity. We're behaving the way we should behave. And they are the ones who give us the gift of their attention. Okay. But I had many fans like that saying, "Oh my God, Rob, you should write a book, all these characters." And I thought, you know what, before cancer, I thought, you know what, the last thing the world needs is another celebrity bio by a non-celebrity. And again, I don't draw them and I don't write them. The characters are famous. I'm grateful for the juice, but I can't do this on my own. However, I had throat cancer, and probably there's every possibility that it was an HPV related cancer that took your dad and Eddie, and from which I so far have survived. But then I thought, now I got a story. Now I got a book. And my friend, the book is important because it is exactly the kind of book that a young man or woman like you should read. The reason the book is powerful is because when people found out that I was going through this particular type of cancer, I didn't blast it on my social platforms until I was done with it and until I was in a position to give expert help. I had hundreds of parents of children who had died, who got a hold of me to say, Mr. Paulson, you will never know what it meant to William or Stacy or Jennifer or Kyle that Raphael or Pinky or Donatello or Carl spoke to him or her on the phone before they passed. And these parents knew their children were not going to make it. I'd get a call from a hospital from make, and not just me, we all do it.
Sure.
This young man with a glioblastoma, he's 9. He maybe will make it to 9.5, but this kid lives for Pinky. And of course the brain called him, I call, okay. So years later, long after their sweet kids have died, these parents reached out to me after they read the book to say, you gotta know what this joy still means to us. Here's a picture of Stephanie talking to Raphael, you know, 6 weeks before she passed. And she's been gone for 15 years now. Yeah. You know, we still miss her, but thank you. Thank you, Rob. Thank me? Are you fucking kidding me? Thank me? That's why the book is important, because it shows the literal power of joy to get you through anything. And I really highly recommend, and you don't have to buy it. You could probably find a dog-eared copy. It's a multi-purpose book. If you have a table that's wonky, you can shove it under the leg. But it really opened my eyes and changed, as I said at the very beginning of this glorious conversation, of what I get to do in the last third of my life, that I get to have this incredible opportunity to share these stories with people just like this young, sweet person who's talking about losing their dad at my age, yeah, to throat cancer. And now we get to be a balm for them, Greg.
Yeah.
What an incredible opportunity to be utterly human. I can't even tell you that how much it means to me that you allowed me to address that. It's the best part of what we do, man. I love it.
Yeah. I think, thank you. Thank you for doing this. Every time you're obviously someone we should start our own weekly podcast, because I could talk to you forever and ever. And every time we do get together on a show, I do think there's something magic about that. And I think it's probably just who we both are about it. But what I want to close this out real quick, you said nothing is an accident. We read the good parts comment here. They followed up in there. And this is what they said. Jesus, guys, you got me crying over here. He lost his ability to talk over the last 2 years. The fact that you were able to manipulate your voice in so many ways is amazing to me. Keep doing an amazing job, both of you. Now, here's where it really hits, and you talk about nothing. Nothing is an accident. This is the idea of how I got my name. Find the good part of everything. Mm. You know what I mean? Come on. Oh.
I'm telling you, I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is way better because I like nice cars. But what we just experienced and what you're all, and by the way, we all experienced this because of the generosity and kindness of that sweet, I presume, a young man, to share that heartbreaking experience. And the upshot of all of it is that his acronym is about joy. The thing that gets him through the loss of his daddy is finding the joy. That's precisely what you and I are about, Greg, and millions of others. Despite the madness that's happening right frickin' now, everybody. I have a friend who is a world-class physicist and teaches at Caltech. We just did a chat about his new book online that chronicled his life with Stephen Hawking. And they wrote 3 books together. His name is Leonard Mlodinow. And we chatted afterwards about the fact that I discussed with him the young man I cited earlier, my friend, my autistic friend, Anthony, with the life-altering anxiety.
Yeah.
Yet in both circumstances, when I say to Leonard, a man who gave Stephen Hawking a run for his money in the intellect department, when I say,
"Hey, God, Leonard, I think so, but if Jack's black and Betty's white, is Marvin gay?"
Nerve. He loses it, starts laughing. Oh my God, Pinky in the Brain, oh my God. And then I go to my dear friend, Anthony, who goes from to disparate in terms of their relative intellect. I don't know that they could be more, you know, separate in terms of what the average person would say, super intellect, not neurotypical, mm-hmm. challenged intellectually in some realms.
Sure.
But with both cases, when it comes to that singular aspect of the joy that hits them somewhere in their brain or their pinky, they just laugh. It's spontaneous. It is not forced. It's authentic. Oh, that's my parole officer. Sorry, hang on. Let me just, okay. But you see my point. And now here we are, no accidents. We're all laughing, whether it's croissant,
nerve.
Hello, nurse.
Turtle power. Or I can't find my testicles, Summer. From Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Just like this young friend who's been courageous enough to share his humanity and the loss of his father, but still finds the joy. It's uniquely human, and it's what drives me. It's what drives you. It's not any different than food, water, sex. It's joy, and we need it. And we seek it out. And shame on us, Greg, if we don't propagate it.
Yeah.
And look what your audience has given us today. Their time, which is something they literally cannot get back. How lucky are we?
Incredible.
I'm telling you, buddy, thank you very much again, my friend, my good friend, for giving me yet another shot at co-opting your show to make it all about Rob.
Rob, thank you for being one of our cool friends.
My pleasure, buddy.
Where can people keep up with you?
Oh, on Twitter, at Yakko Pinky, all one word, YAKKOPINKY. On TikTok, amazing. I put on my first post was I wrote new lyrics to Copacabana. Nobody remembers, at least on TikTok. They're too young to remember.
Yeah, they don't even know. They think that's an original song.
Right. So I wrote something like, let's say, my name is Carl. It's Carl Weezer. Well, I have looks and I have brains, but on my pants, suspicious stains. And then it goes on from there. But I got 3 million views in a day or two. So anyway, on TikTok, it's Rob Paulsen 311, because that's my birthday. Rob Paulsen.
Gotcha.
PAULSEN 311. Instagram is Rob_PAULSEN. And Facebook is Rob Paulsen Voice Actor. So thank goodness for our last courageous question. Mm-hmm. Please, folks, if you have any questions, check out headandneck.org. It will discuss all of the aspects of head and neck cancers, which are different than brain cancer, tongue, mouth, throat, tonsils, vocal cords. And it will also discuss, for people who are interested, Gardasil, the vaccine that used to be given primarily to young girls to prevent them from getting cervical cancer down the road, is now FDA approved for young men to keep from getting the same kinds of cancer that I and sadly our young friend's father had, and Eddie Van Halen. So please, parents, you can make your own decision, but there's a lot of great information about vaccines for this kind of cancer and its prevention in men and women. if given at the appropriate time. So thank you very much for this opportunity, Greg and Bear. You guys, you make me want to be a better man.
We love you, Rob. You know that. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been We Have Cool Friends, like I said, irregularly scheduled, usually on Tuesday show on kindoffunny.com. Next week, get in your questions for It's Hispanic Heritage Week. We're going to have Golden Boy himself, Alex Mendez, here, of course, the host of NBC's Titan Games and award-winning esports commentator, Golden Boy, on next week, next Tuesday. So, and Lucy Camp is on Thursday, I believe, with Tim. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, but man.
Until next time, no. It's been our pleasure to serve you.